I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. In his State of the Union address tonight, President Obama is expected to outline plans to enhance the country's cybersecurity. His proposals come after the Sony hack, one of the most destructive against a corporation, and one that the FBI says the government of North Korea perpetrated. Each year, hacking is becoming more sophisticated and harder for companies and governments to stop. Such cyber warfare has the potential to disrupt everything from financial systems to power grids. Is the Sony hack a harbinger of what's to come? If so, why? What's it all about? Two experts join us for this first hour of Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Nice to have you with us. We have a second hour show today, as always. It's a two-hour show, noon to two, Monday through Friday. And in today's second hour, something of a debate. No, not something of a debate. I think it will be a debate about paid sick leave. President Obama will be talking about paid sick leave tonight. The White House says that 43 million people go without paid sick leave, 43 million workers in this country. In Maryland, the number is well over 500,000. There are efforts in the State House in Annapolis and now in Congress. The president will be speaking about it tonight in a State of Union address to make paid sick leave mandatory. So we'll be talking about it in the second hour of our show, debating the question, is it a fundamental right or a privilege? That's coming up after the news at 1. According to a recently disclosed National Security Agency document as far back as 2010, the United States was working on breaking into North Korea computer networks out of a growing concern about the country's cyber capabilities. That revelation, which we got from the New York Times yesterday, answers in part the question about how the U.S. was able to finger North Korea in the recent Sony hack. And during the State of the Union address tonight, President Obama is expected to talk about this, too, to outline his plans to enhance the country's cybersecurity laws. According to experts, each year hacking is becoming more sophisticated and harder for companies and governments to stop. Such cyber warfare has the potential to disrupt everything from our financial systems to our power grids. At least that's what they tell us. In the meantime, hackers are no longer solitary actors either. They appear to be growing into crime syndicates. Following the massive demonstrations against the terrorist attacks in France that were in response to that massacre at Charlie Hebdo, Islamist hackers targeted 19,000 French websites as an act of retaliation for the demonstration. The head of cyber defense for the French military said it was the first time that the country had been faced with such a large wave of cyber attacks. So this hour we ask, are these recent hacks a harbinger? Are we headed into cyber warfare? And what is this all about anyway? Is this a serious threat to our country, or is it just cyber vandalism? Joining us for this discussion is Midday technology contributor Sean Gallagher. Sean is based here in Baltimore as the IT editor for the Condé Nast website Ars Technica. Sean, nice to have you back on the show.
Good
with us.
Good to be here, Dan.
And also with us today is information security expert Tom Wither, a 25-year veteran of the intelligence community, both in the military and outside of it. Tom is also a novelist and author of two military techno-intelligence thrillers, and he recently wrote an op-ed for The Sun. He's written a few for The Sun, but one that caught our eye about whether we're going to see a cyber Pearl Harbor or not, so that we invited Tom Wither on the show with us. Nice to have you with us, Tom.
Thanks. I appreciate being here.
And I hope you don't mind, both of you, that question about what is this all about? One of Dan's what is this all about questions. I ask on behalf of listeners, because I think this will get our conversation started. Some people look at this and say, this looks like sabotage, or I call it cyber vandalism. I think President Obama used that term. Is it more serious than that? Is it potentially more serious than that? Is this really going to affect our lives? So Tom's a newcomer here, but let me start with you on that one, Tom Wither. It's the very first indicator publicly, particularly with the Sony hack, of the things to come. The director of NSA, commander of Cyber Command, was in front of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee last November, where he talked about the potential for infrastructure attacks, which is where the real serious problem is going to happen. And while I certainly don't speak for the government in any way, shape, or form, these are my personal opinions. The knowledge that this is coming is not something new within the IT security community, as I'm sure Sean can talk about. The power infrastructure, water delivery services, road, rail management systems, air traffic control, all these kinds of things are the vital pieces of our critical national infrastructure. President Obama back in 2009 talked about those items being critical to our national infrastructure, and the need to protect them is a very serious one. So these kinds of things that you see that are evidence of more publicly accessible services across the internet, things like Twitter accounts and web pages and those kinds of things being hacked, are indications of people with growing capability wanting to be able to, or growing the ability to get to the point where they can actually hit the national infrastructure. And the director of NSA, Commander Cyber Command, Admiral Rogers, talked about that in front of the committee where
You think
that.
This is real. Okay. He thinks it's real, and you're convinced.
And I absolutely think it's real, yes. Yeah. This is not something that's going to go away. This is going to be an ongoing problem for many years.
Sean, where are you on this?
Well, there's a bigger picture to all of this, which is that the internet as a whole has many, many security issues. If you think about the internet as like a place, internet's like a major city. People go and do things on it every day and go about their daily lives, but there are places where crime happens. There are places where there's espionage happening in daily life in any major city. There are people spying on each other, stalking, whatever. And so the internet is a lot like, say, the Baltimore of the Wire or the New York City of the 1970s. There's a lot of stuff going on in background. People are nervous about crime, but it's at a level where people still go about their daily lives and feel comfortable about doing their daily lives, figuring it'll never happen to them. The problem is that the way things have been shifting on the internet over the past decade, really, and especially accelerating over the last 4 or 5 years, the internet is becoming less and less like, say, Baltimore and more like Mogadishu 1990. Mm-hmm. Right? There's the potential for it to break into pieces, into conclaves of places where we can be safe, but the rest of the internet is a wild place we'll never go. There's the possibility of cyber attacks, as he mentioned, but also the weapons that are used to do those attacks are in the hands of so many more people than they ever were before. They're so accessible to so many people. So that was why it was so difficult for people to really say that the Sony attack was done by North Korea, because the tools that were used to do this were accessible to a very large number of people, and the techniques that were used are the same that are used in financial attacks and other attacks that have happened over the past few years.
You said that the last time you were on the show and we talked about the Sony hack.
Right.
And so since then, I wonder, you know, are you convinced of what the government has been saying, the FBI and NSA?
I'm more convinced that they have evidence that points to this. I think that there's still room for some debate about whether North Korea by itself was involved in this. I think they may have had some help from outside or help from inside Sony. It's entirely possible, given that that's part of any sort of full espionage type operation. You have people who go inside organizations to assist. So there may have been, as they call them, boots on the ground inside Sony to help them do this. But I think that there's enough evidence. I can't see the evidence because it's classified. Mm-hmm. But I think there's enough evidence to say that North Korea was involved in some way.
If you had told me that it would take a Seth Rogen movie to get our government to really confront these issues, I would have said, you are crazy. This is a defense official being quoted in the New York Times a few days after the Sony hack and all the controversy that swirled around the release of the film, The Interview. But then again, this whole thing has been crazy. So, you know, my question opening here, is this a real threat? What is this all about? Is this just sabotage or vandalism? Comes with this as a background, the Sony hack, right? And so many people out here may look at this and say, well, it's embarrassing to that corporation, but it didn't really affect my life. But the scenarios that you lay out, Tom Wither, are real, critical national infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And if you take what Sean is saying about these actors that are going on in the Mogadishu of the internet. Anything could happen. To what end, though? This is what I'm getting at. Is there financial gain for somebody in any of these hacks, or is it really about sabotage?
Well, it really depends on what the intent of the actor is, and you can have people out there whose intent is to gain monetary results out of it, and with like the Sony hack, you have that motivated at least in part by a desire not to have a movie that's critical of a leader of a totalitarian regime being criticized in a film and satirized and then, you know, assassinated. So you know, it all depends on what the desire of the criminal, if you will, or the bad actor, the malicious actor, is behind the attempted attack.
It could be ideological.
Sure. And
right. I'm always looking for money. So I try to follow the money, and I don't see
not,
it here.
There's not a separation between the two, though, because often cyber criminals are acting with the blessing or at least the turned eyes of the state they're operating from. If you look at what happened to Target and Home Depot, those places were attacked by cyber criminals probably in Russia, based on the attributions that have been done so far. And there are rings of cyber criminals operating in Russia that have ties to the intelligence community in Russia. So they're often used as sort of a cyber militia by the Russian government to take care of things online that they don't want to take care of officially. And the same is true in China. The same is true in many other countries. And if you look at, for example, what happened with the Syrian Digital Army, for example, a group of people who were, as far as we know, enthusiastic supporters of Assad, who may have been state operators, they may have been individuals operating on behalf of the Syrian government, and they went into Twitter accounts and took them over, and they did other things. There's not a very big division in capability between a group of really idealistic or very financially motivated individuals operating outside of the big tent of the state and people who are operating as state-supported hackers. And the other thing is that people who operate for state-supported operations often conceal themselves in ways to make them look like they're the other people.
Right.
So you know, the NSA even attempts to disguise some of its operations to make themselves look less awesome. So that they're like more amateur hackers from someplace else to conceal the facts conceal where the attack is coming from. So, and China does the same thing.
Tom Wither provided us with some what he called malicious scenarios. And I know you're not a novelist, but also primarily you're an intelligence security analyst for a long time. You were in the Air Force years ago and since then worked in security, right?
Yes, and the point of those scenarios is, you know, here, put my author hat on for a minute, and in a fictional sense, what is the art of the possible, or what would a bad actor might try and do, given, you know, the kinds of things Sean's talked about from the standpoint of the tools being out there and they can be readily shared across the internet and those kinds of things. You know, if someone were able to leverage a hacker organization's toolkit, a nation state or someone else with a terrorist organization, those kinds of things, and take those tools and use them to do what the military would refer to provide value added on the battlefield, if you will, and support their ultimate objective. So one of the things I do in my writing is I take the cyber attack and then I go ahead and try and fuse it with what the end bad guy's goal is. So can, you know, if a bad actor wanted to cripple the United States and keep it from moving troops overseas to do something, if you think about it for a minute, you move troops in very few, very limited ways across something that's supported by elements of those critical national infrastructures.
And based on what you know about systems, about hackers, these are all plausible to you?
From the standpoint of my IT security training that I've received, absolutely, yeah. There is a lot of plausible possibilities here, and that's kind of reinforced by some of the statements that Admiral Rogers made in front of the committee publicly last November.
Well, can you give one example before we go to our first break? Can I suggest one?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
You mentioned gas, meaning natural gas, shipments of natural gas, a source of energy for the country.
Even plain old petroleum products moving through pipeline.
All right.
If you were to gain remote access to the SCADA systems that control those things, and SCADA is an acronym that stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition, I believe. When you access those systems, you can turn valves on and off remotely. You can manage systems. You can reconnect and disconnect power. If you issue commands that are bad for the system and exceed the design standards, you might be able to rupture a pipeline. You could turn off the flow of gas from somewhere until someone can establish manual control over that system again at a close range. You could, if you cause such a disruption that bursts a pipe, you know, it only takes one spark, and the next thing you know, you have a fire and an explosion and massive property damage, potential loss of life, all those kinds of things. All of these kinds of things are possible if you can gain access, and Admiral Rogers was very clear about that, the fact that there are people out there trying to gain access and organizations trying to do that.
But there are people also trying to set up defense and protection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? Or
right.
Do we assume? We assume we, they
well,
are, right?
I think it's safe to say that there are people doing those things. Oh, now, one of the problems that we faced coming into this decade is that a lot of companies, a lot of industries were using open internet connections to communicate with remote systems like pipelines, with switching stations and things like that. So they were open to somebody finding them and then attacking them in this way. And but they don't even have to get on the internet now to attack these things. You don't even have to be connected to these computers over the internet to attack these things. This was demonstrated by Stuxnet, which was the malware that allegedly the United States and Israel developed to attack Iran's nuclear development capabilities and destroy its equipment in its centrifuge lab. That was code that was written in a way that it went after the SCADA systems that controlled those centrifuges and turned up the speed on them so that they basically flew apart. And that got in on a USB stick. A USB drive, a thumb drive. It was inserted, it was carried in from outside by either an accomplice or an unsuspecting individual and introduced into the Iranians' network without a hacker ever getting physical access to the system. So that's a threat. And those are things, that's the kind of thing that happens with these cyber weapons. And the other thing we should mention is that it's not just these sorts of organizations that are target. You know, Sony was attacked. Sony is not a piece of critical infrastructure.
Right.
Right. But this is really what it comes down to, is this is the new form for guerrilla warfare. You know, guerrilla warfare counted on going after soft targets, attacking from behind, disturbing the homeland to try and draw people away from the front line. The fifth columnists of World War II that we often been discussed. This is the fifth column. This is guerrilla warfare. This is what they call asymmetric warfare at its most evolved state, because if I can go after companies that are soft targets and disturb people's lives enough to make them feel upset about things and make them feel unsafe in their daily lives, it takes away from the mission to protect critical infrastructure.
Yeah, and it's also a very low overhead capability, and it doesn't matter which side of the ocean you're on.
Oh, yeah, it's dirt cheap to do.
Sean Gallagher, IT editor of Ars Technica, and Tom Wither, a longtime intelligence analyst, information security expert, and novelist, our guests in this hour of Midday. If you have a question about all this, this is a good time to call us, 410-662-8780, the Midday email address, midday@wypr.org, and send us a tweet with a question to MiddayWYPR. Welcome back to Midday. Yeah, what did you just use the word? Extortion, Sean Gallagher?
Extortion, yes.
Yeah, I always look for the money, follow the money. If the motivation is financial, extortion would work, would it not? You have to convince somebody that you are a real threat, that you could actually disturb a system someplace.
Well, right? Last time we were on, we had a caller who called in about Crypto Wall.
And, oh, yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
how files on his hard drive have been encrypted by this virus. It's hit a number of state and local governments and other companies as well, where it's encrypted the content of the hard drives of their network to the point where they can't recover them. And there's no real way to recover the data if it hasn't been backed up other than to pay the people and get the code to decrypt it.
Have they asked for money?
They have. Well, that's the whole reason for this
to
get money. They make it very easy for you to pay them. They have great customer service.
That's right. You explained that last time. And it's easy to pay them.
Yeah, they give you the instructions on how to get Bitcoins.
Unbelievable. Anyway, Sean Gallagher here again from Ars Technica. And joining us this time is Tom Wither, who had many years of experience in information security, IT security. Another scenario about cyber attack. This is not just a cyber annoyance, but a real cyber attack. Airline travel. Let's talk about that. How would that?
A number of years ago, when Boeing was developing the 787 Dreamliner, they discovered a little tiny flaw in that passengers in the cabin accessing the Wi-Fi system could potentially cross-connect to the flight control systems. The FAA called them out on it and said,
Wait, let me think about that for a minute.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're in your you're actually in your seat. A passenger in a plane.
Yep. And you have your laptop, and you open your laptop up, and you access the Wi-Fi network on the aircraft so that you can access the internet nominally. And instead, you can potentially send commands to the flight control system and cause very bad things to happen to an aircraft in flight.
But they discovered this.
They discovered this during the design review of the aircraft. Naturally, every plane needs to be certified by the FAA for flight in the airspace. And the Boeing engineers realized, okay, this is obviously bad as well, and they took actions to correct the fault. But it forms the basis of one of the attacks I use in the second novel. The potential for this, to this day, there was a lot of conversation during the recent hacker convention where they had a number of experts come out and say, look, this is highly unlikely. You have to have the right protocols and those kinds of things. But one of the problems you find inevitably in the IT world is that there are always undocumented features. And you have a lot of design reviews. You have a lot of very capable and very well-intended engineers doing a lot of very good due diligence kinds of work to fix these things. And inevitably, something might get missed. You can always find somebody who has enough time, enough energy, enough resources who can get their hands on the right components and the right software to dig through it and potentially find a way to worm their way into the wrong part of the system you don't want them in to do bad things.
Yeah.
And the best part about that is
something potentially disastrous in this case.
Absolutely. You know, you have 200-300 people per aircraft. And, oh, by the way, when you go through TSA security, yeah, sure, they'll x-ray your laptop, but they're not checking what software you have on it. And it's certainly not a gun or a knife.
There was supposed to be a presentation called Getting Root at 30,000 Feet.
Getting Root?
Yes, as it is, in taking root control of computer systems at 30,000 feet about hacking on airliners at the security conference I was at this weekend, ShmooCon in D.C. And it was canceled, and I believe it was canceled because they had a vulnerability that hadn't been revealed to the airlines yet. And so there's the possibility that those attacks are still possible. And there have been a number of other reports at Black Hat last summer and other places where certain systems that were used for communications, like satellite communications, that are shared between the aircraft control systems for some functions and for communications for passenger internet, were vulnerable. But it's very difficult the way that systems are architected in aircraft to, say, hijack the airplane from your laptop. But you can do things that make the flight miserable, and you can do things that make the flight need to be ended early. So you can divert people.
Has anything like this happened so far? Or you're talking about vulnerabilities.
Not to my knowledge.
Not that we know of. However, there was a lot of speculation around the Malaysian Airlines flight that disappeared off of Australia last year about how that might have been done by software.
Have there been any other incidents related to air flight that?
Well, there have been certain things that have happened within air traffic control centers that have disrupted travel. That are indications of how vulnerable the air traffic control system. Well, in one case, an employee set a fire, and it burned some systems, and it wiped in Chicago, and it disrupted air travel in and around Chicago for days. And then there was another system that was
If you can't hack, just set a fire.
Right. And then there was a software glitch in some software in the UK for handling incoming flights that forced airports to shut down across England for most of the day. And that was just because some software, flight planning software, failed in a subtle way. And things weren't syncing up, and they had to shut down everything, and people were left stuck at the gate.
Yeah, back to Sean's point very briefly on the fire that was set. The insider threat is always your biggest problem because they already are inside your walls. They're inside your wall. They potentially have access to your system, and it's legitimate access. It's access you gave them. If they can find a way to elevate that access, rather, on the system from just a simple user to administrator or root-level privileges, then they can do some very, very damaging things, be that in a corporate setting or in a more critical infrastructure setting. And all of those air traffic control control comms that Sean talked about, where they were simply disrupted by a fire, they also ride across the national telecommunications backbone in this country to keep air traffic control centers synchronized and hand off aircraft correctly. If you get into the backbone where those communications pass back and forth and inside the routers and the switches that pass that, and you can disrupt those, you're going to have the same effect and you don't have to set the fire. So if you can remotely access those boxes and control them and then turn them off or damage them in some way electronically, you're going to end up with the same kind of results.
Tom Wither is an information security expert, a longtime intelligence analyst. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday. If you have a question for Tom or for Sean Gallagher, who is the IT editor for Ars Technica based here in Baltimore. And what you were both talking about there, just, you know, it occurs to me, it seems trite to say, you know, we're so reliant on the digital world, the cyber world, the internet itself, right? And that brings me to this quote from someone we haven't heard from for a while, or much from for a while, Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor who leaked all the data about the government surveillance programs. Earlier this month, he gave an interview. Who is this with? This is an interview with James Bamford, published by Nova.
Right.
This is what Snowden had to say about cyber attacks. When people conceptualize a cyber attack, they do tend to think about parts of the critical infrastructure like power plants, like what we're talking about here, water supplies, and similar sort of heavy infrastructure, critical infrastructure areas. And they could be hit as long as they're networked connected, as long as they have some kind of systems that interact with them that could be manipulated from internet connection. However, what we overlook and has a much greater value to us as a nation is the internet itself. The internet is critical infrastructure to the United States. We use the internet for every communication that businesses rely on every day. If an adversary didn't target our power plants, but they did target the core routers, the backbones that tie our internet connections together, entire parts of the United States could be cut off. Just a little bit more here from Snowden. They could be shunted offline, and we would go dark in terms of our economy and our business for minutes, hours, or days. That would have a tremendous impact on us as a society, and it would have a policy backlash. What do you think of those comments, Sean?
Well, it's entirely within the realm of the possible, and in fact, internet being shut off for whole countries happens surprisingly frequently. And it happened in Syria several times. And the first time
didn't we retaliate against North Korea in such a way through China?
We did not necessarily do that. I think that's a case of a cyber militia forming and
it
for them.
Oh yes. Okay.
I mean, because Anonymous went after North Korea. There were lots of people who went after North Korea. It doesn't take much to take North Korea offline.
Okay.
They have one network pipe going in from China, essentially.
Right, right.
And there's only one way in, one way out. And if you attack that and bring that down, you've cut off internet for the entire country. But in Syria's case, it's believed that somebody was going in to try and install some sort of software on the routers remotely to spy on Syria. And it, as they call it in the business, bricked the router. It totally disabled the router, and it shut down internet for the entire country as it was a cascading failure. So this sort of thing can happen. It can be malicious or it can be accidental.
Yeah, that was accidental, non-intentional. Right. What do you think of Snowden's comments? You agree with Sean on that?
Well, I think that what Snowden's articulating is something that people in the industry have talked about for years. This is not a surprise. This is not a shock to the people who study this stuff from a professional standpoint in the IT security industry. We've heard about this for 10, 15, 20 years now. There used to be two major routers, May West, May East, that actually handled the bulk of the internet connectivity for the country. And if someone could access those things and flip the switch, the right switches and the right bits, you know, your access to do practically anything from banking transactions to just plain old surfing the web would go away. But also, you would also lose a major portion of the backbone that dealt with things like air traffic control and moving oil and purified water around for people to drink and all those kinds of good things. So, you know, this is not a surprise. It's not a shock, and it's something the IT security community has been working on for many, many years.
That said, the internet is a lot more robust than it used to be in terms of how many places It connects to each other. It is interconnected. It's a network of networks, and it's a lot more agile in terms of when mm-hmm. things failing over, mm-hmm. things being rerouted.
Yeah.
The way the internet works is it listens for where the shortest path for things to follow is based on what they call border gateway protocol advertisements. The routers talk to each other and say, I've got these addresses. You can send traffic my way, and the routers decide based on what's closer in terms of time where mm-hmm. to route things. If a major router were to be taken out, the internet would sort of stitch around it. However, if somebody were to take out a couple of routers or several routers at the same time, it could interrupt internet connections for billions of people.
And if you can poison those routes and have those poisoned routes right. distributed amongst the routers, then you result in the same effect without actually bricking the router, as Sean talked about earlier.
Before we go to the next break, and after the break, I want to talk about what you expect to hear from President Obama tonight, or what you would like to hear him say about this. Ars Technica, it seems like, Sean, your staff, the contributors to your website, are tracking hackers more and more all the time. And hackers generally, do they make themselves known? They seem to have a lot of clever names. Every time I go to your website, I see some name I don't recognize, and I get curious, and I read about it, and I realize it's somebody up to some skullduggery on the internet. And I don't mean just anonymous. I mean many others.
Oh, there are many, many groups of individuals.
Do they give out press releases? Do they?
Well,
how do you guys find out about
it? The guys from Lizard Squad, the group that was doing denial of service attacks on Sony's PlayStation Network and on the Xbox Network, actually gave television interviews over Skype.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They
that
did.
Right?
And some of them are now under arrest.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of ego involved mm-hmm. in hacking, a lot of name credibility, even if it's not your real name. They have handles they go by. People know them by these names. Lizard Squad is this group that's been attacking gaming networks for forever, and they escalated into doing some other things, and they actually set up a service where people could buy denial of service attacks. Mm. So you go to this thing called Lizard Stressor, a website that they set up in a data center in Bosnia, and you could order up a certain number of hours.
Is this a hobby? Is this just anarchy? What is this about? What's the motivation there? Is it ego?
It's all of those
yes.
and more.
Yeah,
absolutely.
In this case, they were also turning it in money because they were having people pay to use this service, which was based on using home routers around the world that had been hacked because people left their default passwords on them.
Yeah.
And those routers had been turned into attack machines. They'd been set up to launch attacks against, they were called what's called a botnet. Mm. They were set up as a network of remotely controlled devices that were sending these network attacks against websites. And they could do 50, 60 gigabytes per second worth of attacks on some of these sites.
And it's the sense of accomplishment for those who pull this off?
For them, it's, you know, like thumbing their nose at people saying, you're not secure. And then also, it's, I can make money off this because I can extort people and say, I'm going to attack your site again if you don't pay money.
That I would understand.
Two points to tack on to what Sean said. The first one is basic computer security should be something everybody knows. And if you practice it and you do what you're supposed to do, you reduce the ability for people to do that kind of stuff. And second of all, what worries me is the kinds of organizations that don't have colossal egos but have the technical capability and fly under the radar and offer their services to nation states or other large actors willing to pay them a massive amount of money to do critical infrastructure attacks and those kinds of things mm-hmm. to our nation or to others.
Tom Wither, information security expert and a former intelligence analyst and novelist. I'll tell you about his novels before the hour is through. If you have a question for Tom or for Sean Gallagher from Ars Technica, our midday tech contributor, 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Our toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. And the email address, if you have a question, you want to send it a question by email, midday@wypr.org.
Still ahead in midday's second hour, more than 500,000 Maryland workers do not get paid sick leave. They often face a choice, work while they're ill or risk losing their jobs. As the Maryland General Assembly and Congress take up the issue of paid sick leave, we ask, is it a right or a privilege? That debate comes up in hour two of midday, after the news at one.
I'm trying to think of a James Bond movie. Has there been a James Bond movie that
Tomorrow
dealt
never
with
dies.
Which
yeah.
one? Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yep.
Which James Bond was that?
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
and the
one in China with who's the bad
guy?
Oh
yeah.
Damn it.
I can't remember.
See his face, I can't remember his name.
But anyway, that was about a major hack or stopping
it was information warfare. It was a media conglomerate using their multiple media paths to conduct information warfare kinds of activities by manipulating stories, releasing software that had thousands and thousands of bugs in it so people would patch it constantly, all those kinds of things. So that was kind of not one of the first. There's a number of them out there.
I thought I saw that.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Who was the female lead against
the Chinese lady? I cannot remember her
name. What,
Michelle Yeoh? Yes.
Okay, thank you. And what is Black Hat, Sean?
So Black Hat is a new film by Michael Mann, full of gunfire and dark imagery and things like that.
But it's about a hacker.
There is a hacker who attacks a Chinese nuclear power plant and makes it melt down. And then goes after the Chicago Board of Trade, and they pull this hacker, Chris Hemsworth Thor, out of jail and recruit him to find this guy and track him down.
Okay.
And it goes from keyboards to guns pretty quickly. So,
Jim in Towson wanted to say something about keyboards. Jim, one of our listeners giving us a ring. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what did you want to say about this?
Oh, first of all, this you're looking for a motive for these things, whether it's... the individual or the nation, the motive is usually power, not money, but power. And the keyboard allows us a lot of power. And I thought to myself, nuclear devices will become moot. They'll be replaced by keyboards.
It's interesting. Well, it'd be a little less painless, I guess.
Depends.
Yeah, it depends on what they do.
Yeah.
Depends on what they do.
Yeah.
You're certainly not going to have, several... tens of thousands of people raised to 1,000,000 degrees Fahrenheit in a tenth of a second. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But, you can still cause mass casualties kinds of things with a keyboard if you can get the right access and if you have the right tools and enough resources and time to do it. Because one of the things that's come out from some of this, the discussions that have happened certainly in public in front of the Intelligence Committee and other places, and just from a plain old hacker standpoint, is it takes time to learn enough about the target network you want to go after to then determine whether or not you have an opening you can exploit, time to develop the tool to use that opening to leverage it and then to gain access and do the bad things you want to do. It can take weeks, it can take months, it can take years. It depends on how good the perimeter security is. It's like a burglar casing your house. If it's a burglar walking around and casing your house, it could take them a little while to find the window that's open or just a crack that they might be able to lever open with the right crowbar. If it's a police officer driving by on patrol, kind of like somebody from Department of Homeland Security or one of the other places charged with doing cybersecurity things, they might actually come by and say, oh, by the way, your window's cracked and you might want to close it.
Tom Wither, you spent 25 years in the military?
More than, and it's a combined time of military active duty service and civilian service with the Air Force.
In intelligence service, in IT.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean Gallagher was a naval officer years ago and then developed an interest in information technology and then, of course, journalism, covering and writing about it. But you think about the arc of things here. During your time on this earth, we went from building all these systems from nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Computer systems from nothing, developing software and this massive internet, to now, where hackers are trying to subvert the whole thing that was built during your time. And this all happened rather quickly. When you think about
it's easier to break things than it is to build things.
Yes.
And you always have bad actors. You always have bad actors. Right. You have banks, you're going to have bank robbers.
Yeah. Hey, Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger is joining us here for a few minutes today. I'm happy to say, senior member of the House Intelligence Committee who has been pushing for cybersecurity. And Dutch Ruppersberger, thanks for being on our show today. Thanks for calling
in. Dan, it's good to be here to communicate. How you doing?
Tom Wither is here with us and Sean Gallagher. And President Obama is expected to address cybersecurity tonight in the State of the Union. I just wondered, first of all, what do you expect to hear from the president?
Well, I think what the president is going to do is first identify to the public how serious this cyber threat is. We each year in our country, we have billions of dollars that has stolen from our businesses, whether it's financial, whether it's medical, whether it's space, you know, those type of issues. And yet our legislation and laws that guide, you know, what we do in the area of cyber attacks and cybersecurity, you know, need to be changed. We literally are dealing with an antiquated law that won't allow the intelligence community, when they see attacks coming in, warn companies like you know, you had in a Target situation or that type of thing. And I think one of the things that is really important that the public needs to know, because the public isn't aware until recently how serious this threat is that we've worked hard for years to get bipartisan legislation that not only will allow our intelligence community to work in a partnership with our business sector to protect us and to protect, but also that we've worked very closely to deal with the privacy issues. I'm trained as a lawyer. We follow the Constitution. When we passed this bill in the House called it's an information sharing called the CISPA bill, we brought the ACLU to the table. We brought privacy groups in, and we made a lot of changes. And in the United States of America, we probably have more checks and balances on privacy than any other country in the world.
And this is called, you said CISPA. That stands for Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. Is this the one Tom Weathers spent the weekend reading?
I spent part of it, yeah.
I'm glad you did, because it's really not that long of a bill. We made sure that it was basic, that it was information sharing. Part of the problem we had when we were developing this legislation was the fact that that we needed the business sector to be involved. We had to give them incentives to cooperate. When attacks were coming in and information sharing, we had to make sure that they'd be involved. Again, 80% of the network in our country is controlled by the private sector. So it's extremely important that we, where our intelligence community has the expertise to protect us, but there hasn't been this communication that's occurred. The president is seeing it. The intelligence community passes on information and our bill to Homeland Security, so you don't have any of the NSA or other groups like that. They get the attacks, they see them, and they pass it on to in the country to either the FBI or in our bill it will go to Homeland Security. And again, if I get too far in the weeds, I've been working on this, but maybe
okay,
if there are any questions you want to ask.
Well, actually, Sean Gallagher from Ars Technica, he's the IT editor for that website, has a question for you.
Yes, I had a quick question, sure. Congressman, about what's been done. I haven't seen the actual text of the new bill, but what's been done to handle the liability issues around sharing information by companies?
Well, liability is the main issue to get the business community to do this. Remember, I'm a Democrat, so a lot of where my focus in developing this bill was working on the privacy issues, where Rogers was focused more on the business side. And we knew we had to get the business community involved, or they weren't going to be involved. They're not going to say if they pass information and use good faith that then they could be sued if something didn't happen. That was one of the main issues. But this bill, what the president's going to put out tonight, talk first about the threat. But the second, are there any, compared to my bill, and by the way, I reintroduced my bill. Mike Rogers retired. I'm a Democrat. I know my bill won't go that far. But what my bill, what I'm trying to do is to keep the conversation and keep a focus so we can get legislation passed to protect our citizens and our company. And
well,
that's really
excuse
what,
me.
What's out there now.
I understand. I just want to understand what the liability issue is. A company is concerned that it could be sued if it reports a possible cyber attack to the NSA
We're an extremely litigious society, and if something happened and a company passed information in good faith, and then something occurred that was negative or whatever that might be, as long as they use good faith, they're not going to be held accountable. If we don't have that provision in the bill, basically the business community won't get involved. We go nowhere. The only way this works to protect us is this partnership between the business. An example, you know, look at what happened with Target. I mean,
okay.
Tom
Wither wanted to say something, Congressman, about this liability business.
Yeah, one of the things that's been known about inside the IT security community for years is that a lot of these cyber attacks to commercial entities go unreported. For one of those very reasons, they do not want to open themselves up to potential litigation from their consumers of their product.
Customers,
right.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. All right.
Yeah. So you get things like McAfee will tell you if you look at the. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For example, Sony was hacked long ago. mm-hmm. and they knew about it, and they knew that data from some of their customers in Brazil was revealed.
Okay.
And they chose not to report it because they felt that it would just make people upset, and they weren't required to by law, so they weren't going to share
the
information.
I see. And they were concerned about being sued for privacy breaches right. of some kind by their customers.
Right.
Or...
right. And that happens
and
all the time.
Way, and the only way we can protect our whole country and our allies is the business sector has to cooperate. We have to have rules and regulations. You know, if you look 20 years from now, we're the pioneers in the area of cyber, so we've got to get it right. And we have to make sure we have the foundation. And what's so important, too, in our country is we need to protect the liberties and the privacy of our citizens. And we do. This bill is basically the same as a search warrant in a criminal case. Only in intelligence, you use a different test called reasonable articulable suspicion versus probable cause in a criminal case. But, you know, we have to now move quickly. And, you know, this bill was passed. I hate to say this, but if you look how ineffective our Congress was in passing legislation in the last 2 years, and yet we were able to get two major bills involving cyber passed in the House, and they just stalled in the Senate. And now I think the administration is working very closely with us, all of us together, because this what the president is putting out there, there are only two things that we basically disagree with in the bill, and one is from the business community sector. If they want to share information, the president's bill says they have to take out all the personal information before they can pass the information to whether it's the government or another company or whatever. And the business sector is saying, look, we're not in the cyber field. We're not going to spend millions of dollars, and especially small companies, to have experts that we have to pay to take out personal information. Government, this is what you do. We want you to take it out. And that's kind of one of the areas that is different from the bill that I put in. The other one really is reporting of information. And I think this one is easier to work out. The business sector said, look, if you're the financial institution, which has pretty good security, but you know, they're constantly will be under attack. Our banks, our credit cards, and that type of thing. So what the business community is saying, or the people, if you want us to cooperate, we want to go to Treasury. We don't want to report everything to Homeland Security, and they're going to have tremendous volume anyhow. If we deal, you know, with certain groups, we go to Treasury, or we might want to go to another government agency, and that's the other real. Those are the two big proposals. Other than that, they're most of what my bill says, the cyber, the CISPA bill, which again passed overwhelmingly, I think 288 votes in the last Congress, where right. we had the left, the right, middle, all coming together.
All right, Congressman, well, thank you for the update on your bill.
Okay.
Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger reporting on his cyber intelligence sharing bill, which we'll be hearing more about. Maybe the president might make reference to it tonight in his State of the Union address. I want to mention Tom Withers' two novels that he wrote in the last couple. Well, he actually started a long time ago, finally got these published in the last couple of years. One is called Autumn Fire. The publisher is the same. It's Turner Publishing. And the newer of the two is Autumn Fire, the mm-hmm. second
yeah.
one?
Autumn Fire is the new
one. The first one was The Inheritor. And these are both based in your experience in information technology and military?
Yes, both my experience in the intelligence community yeah. and my experience within IT security, you know, overlaid with the threat of terrorism.
And Tom, you live here in Maryland, is that right?
Yes, I do.
Excellent. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We just got a couple of minutes left here. So when the term cyber Pearl Harbor comes up, you know, mm-hmm. one thinks of an attack and then declaration of war and we're at war. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see things happening on that kind of a scale?
I think it will happen eventually. We're going to get to the point where somebody figures out how to do this. And a nation state that has a grievance with us at some point in the future can use cyber attacks to do some initial crippling of our infrastructure.
Or not even
making us
a nation state?
Not even a nation state. Anybody who has the time, the money, the resources to do something and has a motivation to do it could do these things. The problem is that it's more likely, while a cyber Pearl Harbor is likely, it's more likely that there will be continued ramping up of just a general background of bad stuff happening. More and more corporate hacks, more and more attacks on vulnerable organizations.
I want to ask both of you this last question then. If you were scoring 1 through 10, 10 being the highest, what would you say about our country's response to this, our gearing up to protect our systems? Where are we?
I'd have to say we're somewhere in a 5 and a 6 range right now because we're
I'd agree with that. I mean, the NSA has done some really interesting and good things in defense of defense networks, but we don't have any real protection for a good piece of the commercial internet.
Sean Gallagher, Baltimore-based IT editor for Ars Technica. Check out that website sometimes, folks. It's a, as I've said before, it's a really rich website full of information about this digital world. Thank you again for being here, Sean.
Thank you.
And Tom Wither, nice to meet you.
Thanks.
I mentioned your
nice
two novels, The Inheritor and Autumn Fire, and he comes to those novels with a lot of experience in information technology and securities. Nice to have you on the show, and thank you for your perspective.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you having me here.
Please enjoy lunch from Bagby Pizza Company, located in the historic Bagby Building near Harbor East, providing lunch for our guests today here on Midday.